real-time check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And welcome to Monday afternoon, everyone. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch from the Allstate Skyline Studio, high above the Chicago River. Hope you had a great weekend and are looking forward to a great week ahead. We'll talk to Randy Schaefer. She's a digital editor for the Chicago Tribune, coming up in the second half hour of the program. The New York Times did a story about celebrities who have, how do I say this, about people who make fake accounts in celebrities' names. Catherine Davis is in the studio. She can help me here. So that makes sense, right? So I might make a name in, there's this guy named Kip, a country music singer. And there are women coming up to him saying that they've left their husband and they're ready to move in with him because they thought they'd had an online relationship with the guy.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's all these fraudulent accounts. And apparently, and there's Trace Adkins was another one where women have presented them with their divorce papers saying, I left my husband like you asked me to.
Wow, that is certainly one way to be catfished.
That is a bad version of it. All right, Catherine is here. She is a writer for Chicago Inno and joins us every Monday to talk about some of what's going on. But you brought up something we were just talking off the air while Orion was mentioning the Starbucks story and straws. That there's, and I looked up online, you can buy them. There's plastic straws are bad, right?
Right.
Bad for the ocean, the killed wildlife, things like that. So Starbucks is going to get rid of it. A lot of people are moving away from plastic straws. And now there's this pasta straw.
Yeah. So, you know, pasta straws will have that sort of plasticky feel, and it won't be like paper where it could get soggy or dented.
Right.
So, you know, it could really be a useful tool in that way. So it'll be interesting to see if anybody really incorporates these down the line. We were talking about how, you know, you could easily dye them. So if Starbucks wanted to incorporate these, they could have their green pasta straws.
Yeah, but it just I feel like there'd be some leaching of the starch or something would not feel right. But.
Yeah, apparently they don't alter the taste of anything, but I would be interested to try that for myself.
Well, I'm looking on Amazon, and you can buy 250 10-inch straws for $10.
Wow.
And then save them and make a little funky sauce with them after you boil them a little bit later.
All right, well, get them and let us know how they work out.
Okay, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Just to prove to everyone that the Wintrust Business Lunch is good for your life, this past weekend, my family has been living many of the topics we talked about. We had last week on the program one of the contributors to this app called Food Switch, where you go to the grocery store, you scan the barcode, and it tells you, gives you a health number. And so I was at the grocery store yesterday. I was going up and down the aisle, loving it. So there's that. You and I talk all the time about dockless scooters.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and daughter are in L.A. Emma's looking for an apartment there, and they discovered these or found the dockless scooters and rode them all over the place. Loved them.
Love them.
But it's a love or hate thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the issue with dockless scooters, kind of like dockless bikes here in Chicago, is that where do you put them when they're not being used? You know, there can be a lot of clutter on city sidewalks and parks, other public areas. And it's really a hard thing to regulate. San Francisco actually ceased operations in June of any electric scooters.
I just read that, and I didn't realize that earlier.
Yeah, and then Milwaukee also banned them and is fining people who are still riding them.
So the cities had companies come in, I'm assuming with their blessing, right?
Mm-hmm,
And it went so badly that they not only canceled the contract, now there are vigilantes going after them?
Absolutely. But what's interesting is that Spot Hero is a Chicago-based startup, and they kind of have an idea of how to help organize this problem. So, you know, they are providing parking spaces and parking garages all throughout the city, and they had the idea to make spaces for the scooters to park when they're not in use.
Go ahead.
And this could be, you know, really useful because a lot of people use those kind of the scooters or the bikes for like the last mile transportation. So if someone's driving into the city from the suburbs, finds their parking spot and then has a scooter to ride the next 9 blocks to their office, that could really be helpful for people.
What I don't understand about that, though, is that when they drive it to the office, they're still going to park it outside the office building, right?
Well, maybe, but I think the idea is that they'll find like a closer
okay,
area, another area where, you know, there will be, it'll be easier to park a scooter in a garage than it will a car.
Or at least put it to bed for the night.
Right.
Something a little bit more. And how are we doing in Chicago? We do have scooters.
We don't have scooters yet. We just have the dockless bikes right now. And actually, one of the bike companies, OFO, just dropped out this morning because the Lock 2 regulations are too restricting for
really?
Them.
Really?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
So that story is continuously developing.
Well, my wife and daughter, they loved it because they were going literally from, they went to look at one apartment, and Emma first and then Sharon downloaded the app. They hopped on a scooter, saw the apartment, walked out. Mm-hmm. The scooters were still where they left them.
Okay.
So they signed up and took them to the next one. So
it seems like a lot of fun. I just worry about in a city like Chicago. I mean, once it gets cold, nobody wants to be on a scooter, right?
Well, Divvy bikes. I mean, I guess they take the Divvy.
I guess. But I feel like there's a lot less people on Divvy bikes once it gets cold.
I think
unless
that's
you're
right.
just a warrior.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Catherine Davis is in the studio. She writes for Chicago Inno. Jim Dahlke is usually alongside, but frankly, his contributions have been lacking lately, so we thought we'd try it without him.
Yeah, he's on vacation.
Oh, right.
He'll be back next week.
I knew it was one or the other. I just, right when I opened the mic, I couldn't remember which one it was. Okay, so we talk a lot about Groupon in this segment for good reason, and now it looks like they might be up for sale. They're floating themselves, or what's going on here?
Yeah, so Groupon is reportedly looking for a buyer. It turns out that some of the company executives and the bankers that represent them have contacted a number of public companies recently, like in the past month, kind of gauging if they're interested in acquiring them.
Did they not get the call when Google tried a while ago?
Well, you know, I think they turned down that deal because, you know, it really wasn't in their best interest at the time. I think that was back in 2010. And, you know, Groupon was approaching being valued at $16 billion, and Google was only offering $6
billion. So they're not worth $6 billion now, but back then they were.
Yeah, back in 2011 when they IPO'd, they were worth $16 billion.
So they're worth, what, about 2.3 now, Groupon?
Yep, 2.84 billion. 2.7 billion, I'm sorry. So you can see that, you know, their value has really slipped. It's interesting to see kind of how that happened, and they've been trying to keep themselves relevant with partnerships and acquiring different competitors. But yeah, they're not really what they used to
be. A lot of times, though, with these companies, they have a high value and they're not turning a profit. Groupon is at the point now where they might not be valued as high, but they're actually turning a profit.
Yeah, they turned an operating profit in 2017 for the first time since 2014.
And one of their partners is ParkWiz now, which kind of makes a little sense since we've been Spot Hero talking scooters and all of that.
Yeah, ParkWiz is a local startup that, you know, they make a parking platform that helps you find convenient, affordable parking spaces in the city. And so they incorporated some of their tech into Groupon's apps. You can now find spaces through there.
What does this tell us? Does this mean that they're concerned about their future, or they think they've delivered it to a great spot where they can turn a profit by selling it? Or what do you think the motivation is for the sale?
You know, I think it's kind of a combination of things. I think it's, you know, because their value has slipped a little bit, maybe now it's time to look for, you know, a bigger company that can help support them and their mission and, of course, you know, profit. But also, I think we could see a huge, you know, acquisition number here. I mean, the original founders, investors could really
pay off.
Really pay off, yeah.
Okay, let's go to Google. There's a new, I know John Pletz is reporting this at Crain's, right?
Right.
Has it been confirmed yet, or is it all said?
Yes, oh, Google confirmed this news. But Karen Sauter, she actually comes from Draft FCB. That's one of the city's like oldest and greatest.
What Cohen and Belden used to
ad
be.
Ad agencies, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And she's been named the senior executive overseeing Google's Chicago office. So from what I understand, she'll be overseeing, you know, the hardware space there, any ad or advertising things that come out of the office here.
I was kind of surprised that Chicago has like a lab, right? A hardware lab, one of the only ones outside of California for Google.
Yeah, absolutely. They definitely have like a growing presence here in Chicago. I mean, they have more than 900 workers now. And the engineering team, like you mentioned, has over 200 people.
And there, Google is looking for another sort of quasi-headquarters, too. Not on the scale of Amazon, but
yeah, reportedly, they are looking to lease another 100,000 square feet in the West Loop Fulton Market area.
Okay.
So they definitely have plans for expansion, keep growing. And I think that this new
and
position
Karen Sauter
is part of that.
Will have to bring that through.
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about Nexar. And what's the story about them? That they that they're bringing the technology's coming to Chicago.
Yeah. So Nexar, what they do is they
sometimes I read these stories, and to me the company's the introduction, and right. I forget about the motivation. But I want to talk about this company. But the fact is, they're coming here.
Right. Yeah. So they are a Tel Aviv-based company, and they use smartphones and dash cameras to help reduce driving accidents.
So you incorporate with them, or you partner with them.
Right. You use their app and their dashboard cameras, and then while you're driving, you can receive warnings about potential traffic collisions. You can record collisions, of course, on your dash cam, and all that data kind of helps them make you a better driver.
Doesn't this really just help the insurance companies get the payouts from whoever really causes the crash?
I see how you could think that, but they say that their mission really is to help drivers and to help, safety in general.
And how would it, I don't quite know how it works then, other than if, a GPS could warn me of a crash coming up, right?
Yeah. Well, they just say that their data is deeper and more accurate than what you could get elsewhere right
and
now.
And around the world, right? So they've had some success.
Exactly, yeah. And the expansion to Chicago is part of a more long-term goal of expanding in the U.S. So they also want to go to cities like Los Angeles, Miami, Washington, D.C.,
well, who doesn't,
et cetera.
Right?
Yeah.
It's called Nexar. And so if people want to try this out, it's what, $79 and you can jump on board?
Yep. And you'll get a full rebate for if you're one of the first 500 people to buy one.
Nice. Well, let me know how that works for you.
I will.
Catherine Davis from Chicago Inno.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And it is 12:36 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. All right, so your kid goes to his or her pediatrician. Should the doctor ask your child about their social media use, about how long they spend, how much time they spend on social media each day? Is that a question for them? Well, there are a growing number of pediatricians who say yes, that they should. That's one of the things we'll talk with Randy Schaefer about a little bit later on the Wintrust Business Lunch. But right now we say hello to Dr. Don Green. He is a master performance coach, the guy behind Peak Performance Training School. Don, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. Nice to be here.
Nice for you to join us. I appreciate it. I want to talk about what you do, but maybe to jump right into it, I was listening today to some World Cup talk, and they talked about England, how maybe they are exceeding their expectations. They're in the quarterfinals now, or the semifinals, I should say, first time in decades. And someone made the point, they said, that's because they went in with no expectations. They didn't put pressure on themselves. And so they went in to have fun. When I heard that explanation, I thought, yeah, that's what I'm going to ask Dr. Green about. It seems like taking pressure away from yourself is a nice way to succeed. Am I correct or incorrect there?
That's correct.
So, if you beat yourself up.
Because all pressure is self-induced. You can have it with a team sport where you have group pressure, but basically all pressure is self-induced. And what you're talking about, I totally agree with, that when the game starts, it's about playing soccer, not about working soccer. That before the game, you certainly need to do the drills and exercises and conditioning, which is work. But once the whistle is blown, it needs to shift over from working to playing,
right?
Which is more reactive and less thinking.
Is that is that 100% that all pressure is self-induced? I would imagine a manager, a coach, or someone could put pressure on you in one way or another.
Sure, they can, but it's how you process that and what you do with that, and whether you go back to thinking about results, which is what pressure is all about, or process of executing proper skills. And that takes the pressure off. Execute the skills. Don't worry about the results.
All right. I want to, we'll get back into that in a little bit. I sort of got ahead of myself. But tell me about the Peak Performance Training School. Now, you work with, from what I read, you work with, it seems like, predominantly musicians and athletes. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And are you looking for salesmen or executives? You're looking for others, too, or is that pretty much your field?
That's my field. I worked on Wall Street for 2 years, a year and a half before 9/11 and 6 months after 9/11. And this pertains to business, but I prefer working with athletes and musicians.
Why is that?
That's my background. I came out of an athletic background, and my degree's in sports psychology, and I, even if I worked on Wall Street for a few years, I still don't fully understand it.
Well, that's okay. No one does, doctor. Are there similarities in training and for performance, peak performance athletes and musicians, or are they different altogether?
No, they're very similar. I mean, because they both revolve around how the mind works. And in that regard, they're the same, because you're asking to execute complicated, complex skills that takes years to learn. And then the key thing is what happens when you need to do it, when people are listening. And again, you can call that pressure. And again, what does a person do with that? But in that respect, they're both the same. They're expected to do well in very challenging circumstances.
I know.
And it's how they're...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I know when I've got a speech coming up or an event or something, you know, sometimes I will feel anxiety about it or the nervousness. And I tell my kids, you know, well, you need to be nervous. It's not important if you're not a little nervous about it. Is there something to that? Is there something to pre-performance anxiety, speaking to the importance of something, or is that something that we should work to sort of get out of our heads altogether?
Well, it's how you interpret the energy. If you interpret it as bad or nervous or anxiety, which is a clinical term, then you can feel those symptoms. If you, like athletes and musicians, learn to do from sports psychology to know that that's a given, you're going to feel that. You're supposed to be feeling that energy. Question is, what do you do with it? And what Olympic athletes have learned to do is use it to run faster or jump higher, and that's why people set world records at the Olympic Games, not just Olympic records, because they know how to peak and they know how to use that energy to do their best. When other people think because it's bad, it's anxiety, they should shut it down, and that's a losing proposition. That energy can be used to give an exciting presentation or to set a world record.
All right, explain that for me. How do you use that energy? How do you turn it around?
Well, you get used to using it in mock situations where you're using it for better inflection, for better focus, for more intensity in presentations versus just holding it back or trying to control it and in a monotone. And the idea is to use that energy like an actor does for power and presence.
Yeah, it's interesting. So if you shut it down or you try to focus on something else, what you're really doing is taking your focus away from the event as well, or from that which is giving you that nervous energy.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, once the adrenaline hits, the heart is going to start racing, and that's how you interpret that heart racing. Is this a bad thing, or, oh no, why does this happen now? Versus, yeah, I'm gearing up. I'm getting ready to go. This is going to be exciting.
Have you ever run across an athlete or a musician who has come to you for help, and you just say, well, damn, they're just a natural. It's just they know how to take that energy. They embrace all of that, and they were just born with this. They're just a natural.
Yes, that happens in a minority of cases. Mostly this is a learned skill. Like any other learned skill, like playing piano or throwing a baseball, it takes correct knowledge and practice. Some people come about it more naturally, but for most people, it's a learned skill that they have to learn and practice to get better at.
I guess that's the point then. Rather than have it something you need to endure, it's something you should embrace and use to increase your focus and increase your productivity, whether you're on Wall Street or a ballerina. Dr. Don Green from the Peak Performance Training School. Where do people find more information, Don?
Well, they can go on. It's actually under the project Performance Mastery Project. That's the umbrella. And that they can find information about sports, music, and also I'm working on a new program now to help high school kids do better on standardized tests like the SAT and ACT. Because it has the same effect on students as it does on athletes, that if they don't know how to deal with it, it affects their functioning.
Tell me again, what's the umbrella group? Performance Mastery Project?
PerformanceMasteryProject.com.
Dr. Don Green. I was a little nervous about talking to you, but it seems there was no reason to be.
No reason to be ever.
Check in again. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Unfortunate news for the business world last week when we heard that president of Jewel Osco died at age 55 after a long career with the local grocer. He was involved with the industry for years and worked his way up the chain, as he was recently promoted to president of the Illinois institution. He was very forward-focused and looked at how the 187 locations can stay ahead of the game with grocery delivery. And sure enough, he did just that, as now the grocery delivery space is highly competitive. He set the wheels in motion for Jewel's next step of business. Shifting to a more positive gear, summer is zooming by and we need to take advantage of all the seasonal activities in and around the city. And this year, the one thing that's taking the cake is the architecture tours on the river. People are loving the stories behind the new buildings in the city. The Chicago Architecture Foundation said in 2016, they brought in $15.6 million of revenue through their citywide tours. What's even cooler? Shoreline Sightseeing's boat tour was TripAdvisor's most booked activity in the U.S. in 2017, and second in the world behind the Vatican Museum's Fast Pass. Pretty cool. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Randy Schaefer is in the studio. She's a digital editor for the Chicago Tribune and comes by to talk about what's what in social media and elsewhere. Randy, welcome back.
Hey, Steve.
Okay, so you pulled a story, and this was from the New York Times, and which is just fat. First of all, we know that people make fake accounts, and we talk a lot about fake accounts. I didn't realize it was such an issue that people are making fake accounts pretending to be other celebrities and then duping people out of money and love.
Yeah, and it sounds like something from almost from a really bad Lifetime movie, but this is something that's really happening, and the New York Times is reporting on it.
Okay, so there's this, let's just tell Kip Moore's story. I don't know Kip Moore, but he's a country music singer. I kind of come in and out of country music. And
I stay out of it, so no, you're doing better than me.
Yeah, no, I do like it. I'm not too hip to it right now. But Kip Moore tells these stories where women come up to him after concerts, and they say that they've left their husbands because of what he told them online, or, you know, that I'm ready to be married to you now, or let's move in together, because these fake Kip Moores are contacting these women and fabricating stories, pretending to be the singer.
Yeah, exactly. And some of these women are actually coming up to Kip Moore at concerts with their divorce papers in hand, saying, I left my husband, let's get married.
How can that possibly be?
You know, I personally don't understand it, but maybe it's because I grew up with social media and I've been taught from a young age, be wary of strangers, but I can see, you know,
it's not a stranger, it's Kip Moore.
Well, be wary of people on the internet. But I can see if you're lonely and vulnerable and you're coming from a place where you don't know any better, maybe. But this is just proof that you should always look for the little verification check mark.
Like, well, it's
be
sad.
Skeptical.
It's very
it is.
Sad.
It and, is.
But it's just, that's a great way of talking about a bigger problem. And I think there were like 25 or 30 fake Kip Moore accounts out there.
Oh, yeah. And I thought this was fascinating. There are almost 1,700 of these fake accounts for this Brazilian soccer player.
Yeah, that's the most, right?
Yeah, the most. And then Selena Gomez was second.
More dangerously, though, an Australian police charged a 42-year-old guy with sex offenses for impersonating Justin Bieber on Facebook and getting pictures from kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what does Facebook do? Selena Gomez is big.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, but actually, Selena and I are friends.
Oh, like the real Selena or one of her?
I think it's the real Selena. It's the one who sings. Yeah,
yeah, her? Okay.
What are they doing about this?
So Facebook has actually been taking down some of these accounts, but the Jack Nickus, who wrote the story for the New York Times, said that he went on an experiment to try to report some of these accounts, made some duplicates of his own account, tried both with Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and reporting all of these fake accounts to try to get them taken down. And he said it kind of varies by platform. Some are good at taking accounts right. down, some are bad. It just really depends.
Facebook says they have as many as 80 million fake accounts.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, and so then let's go to Twitter from that, because, you know, Twitter, we talked about the verification process.
Right.
And if you get the blue check, then that proves that that's who you are.
Exactly.
And they've been diluting that. Is that a mistake?
I don't think it's a mistake. I think that, you know, a blue check mark means this person is who they say they are. It doesn't mean Twitter endorses you or your views or what you have to say, but people kind of took it to mean that. So when Twitter was verifying so-called white supremacists, people were getting really upset thinking sure. Twitter was endorsing them, when Twitter was really just saying, like, no, this is just saying that this person runs this account. So they halted that practice.
Okay, but now anyone can be verified.
Yeah, right? Anyone can be verified.
But I guess the point is then if you're truly verified, that's what the aim of it is anyway.
Yes, yes. And the verification process is to differentiate the people from the bots.
Right. Because, you know, I'm verified, I don't mind saying, and I really, you know, it's like anything else. Once you get in the club, you don't want anyone else in the club.
You know, I am verified. I am in that club with you as well. We are both real people. So
but you're a
Gomez
kinder,
too.
You're a kinder person, I think, than I am. Speaking of Twitter, 80 million Facebook fake accounts. Twitter is continually working on purging their numbers as well.
A million a day.
A million a day?
A million a day.
So a million what? Fake? Are these a million bots? Are these a million people pretending to be other people? Both?
A combination of both. A combination of bots, automated feeds, troll accounts, blank accounts, empty accounts. Accounts that are shell accounts that companies sell to people as fake followers. And this story is from the Washington Post, actually. We put it on our site a few days ago. But yeah, you have to think, like, Twitter's kind of shooting itself in the foot by deleting a million accounts a day.
Well, I was going to say, so when their earnings reports come out, they talk about the number of followers they have.
So it's very noble of them, right?
You never say anything noble from
Twitter. Trolls, what?
but it is true that, I mean, by doing this aggressively, it just speaks to how complicated it can be maybe for some of these companies.
Right, but at the same time, it makes Twitter arguably a better place for the actual people on it that are going to want to spend more time there now that the bots and trolls and...
Twitter last week said that it has suspended 1.21 million accounts from its platform from August of 2015 to the end of last year for violations related to the promotion of terrorism. 1.2 million, that's pretty phenomenal to me.
Yeah, you know, that's what, like almost a third of the population of Chicago, more than a third of the population of Chicago.
All right. So I don't know, do I feel better about this or worse about this?
I feel better about it. I like going on Twitter and seeing what my friends have to say, seeing what the media has to say, not seeing what the Russian bots have to say.
Let's talk a little bit about apps that did we talk last week or a couple weeks ago about how apps were recording our conversations?
Not recording, but Facebook did file a patent patent the technology to do so.
Because the story is they're not recording, Randy. Don't be worried about that, right?
I'm not. I'm worried about something else, Steve. What am I worried about?
You are worried about, I forgot.
Screen flowing.
What's screen flowing?
When the app that I have up is capturing what's on my screen and sending it to a third party for market analysis.
Okay, and so why are you afraid of that?
Well, I put my delivery address on there. I have my phone number on there. Sometimes if I'm filling out forms, I fill out my social security number.
Right.
And apps could be actually capturing images of my screen and then sending them off to third-party companies for analysis.
But you're giving the app the information. You don't mind giving it to Amazon for your groceries, but you don't want them to give it to someone else to analyze.
Right. And, you know, with all of this hacking and, you know, Cambridge Analytica, it's a very scary thing. You never know what's going to happen with your data.
I want one other thing before we go. And we're running out of time. I forgot. Pediatricians talking to kids about social media.
Yeah. And this is kind of a new thing. I know when I grew up and went to the doctor, my doctor would always say, like, you know, like, depression, anxiety, how's your home life? And now they're asking kids about social media.
Right. When I grew up, my doctor would say, color TV or black and white TV? but the idea is that more time. So we talked about this last week, that social media can be good for kids or is good for kids.
If you're using
it
right. But
once it gets to be excessive, a couple of hours or more.
Very fine line.
Not that that's the cause of problems, but it might be a sign of there being a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And so hopefully in the coming years, there will be more research on this.
Randy Schaefer, digital editor at the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.